Welcome to the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on RotoGrinders, brought to you by Jock Market. Stop throwing your money away. It's time to check out Jock Market, the app where daily fantasy becomes a stock exchange. Buy and sell shares of players in real time for real money. Download now for 100% deposit match up to $50 using the promo code GRINDERS. And get this, if you don't turn a profit this week, Jock Market is running back their first market guarantee to cover your losses in week three. Download Jock Market in the app or Play Stores, or check out Jock Market at the site jockmat.com, Jock Market, jockmat.com, and use the promo code GRINDERS for 100% deposit match up to $50 on your first deposit. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, here with Stuart Gibson, the man behind the numbers at Advanced Sports Analytics, and for the first time this year, Brandon Adams. Have you noticed anything the first 2 weeks of the year? I know we talked to Stuart about like how you plan for a new season. Obviously, last season we had some, you know, COVID issues. So some of the data from then could be, you know, we had high scoring games, less defense. Is there anything specifically the first 2 weeks of this season that you've noticed, or you've adjusted your strategy based on what you've seen?
No, I don't read too much into the results of the first 2 weeks. I think, let's see, week one was like a break even week for me. And then week two was a bad week. I think I had like 11 GPP lineups and one cash or something.
I'm assuming you didn't have any Derrick Henry. That's probably the reason.
I didn't have any Derrick Henry. Although I was sort of looking back at it, and I saw that his prop was 130 with juice on the over. Like his prop was like minus 115, 130 yards, which is like the highest prop that I can remember. That's an insane rush prop. So although we tend not to like to play Derrick Henry because he doesn't catch passes and he doesn't seem to flash the upside for the price, and we especially don't like to play him on slates like week two, where you would expect the winning score to be very, very high. I can understand why people played him, because that prop was insane. I frankly didn't notice the prop before kickoff. I only noticed it when I was doing the regret retrospective.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that surprised us about Henry the past 2 weeks was they're actually throwing the ball to him. Like, and compared to previous years, Stuart, this we have 2 weeks worth of sample size, right? I mean, we're always dealing with small sample sizes in NFL. When you're running through NFL projections for like this week, like how much are you taking into account the new offensive coordinator and the fact that Derrick Henry was on the field when they're down catching dump offs? You'd have to think that, I don't believe from what I've seen that they were like designed to pass plays. Do you take into account, Stuart, like whether or not like the game script led to, you know, an inflated target share for certain players, or do you regress it just normally like you would with any data?
Yeah. I mean, so we're not trying to predict, you know, targets as a scale or number, but more like target share. I think that's just kind of a more conservative way to go and kind of let indicators like spread, speed kind of you know, the Titans and their opponent dictate like what that raw number might come to. Yeah, I mean, I do think to some extent, like you should be taking into account new offensive coordinator, but like there are other parameters that I think could dictate us being more responsive to changes. So like one thing I was just looking at this morning was kind of our projection on Lamar Jackson's rush share, you know, through 2 weeks. I mean, last week he had a huge rush share, I think like up over 35%, looking at designed rushes, not scrambles. You know, I kind of asked myself like, all right, well, you know, I do think there is something systemically different with this Ravens roster. You know, they don't have a reliable kind of RB1 the same way they did last year, or at the very least, like a reliable committee. So I think I'm kind of taking it like case by case basis, and trying to identify, okay, is there something materially different in the way that the current roster or current coaching staff or kind of regime is handling a certain player? Looking at roster, looking at coaching staff. And then from there, you know, not like fully embracing, like I don't, you know, I think, let's see, Henry had a 15% target share last week. That was the second highest he's had dating back to the beginning of last year. So like, you know, maybe projecting him up a little bit, probably not all the way up to 15%. Now, if he continues to log 15% approaching 20% target share games, you know, maybe then we might want to adjust up. But yeah, I don't know. I think like with a lot of these things, it's kind of safe to take the middle, understanding. And, you know, the way we project things out, like we're not training, you know, past outcomes on the observed target share, but rather on a predicted target share from the past. So like, you know, I think a good model should understand that, well, a guy who's predicted at 11% target share could achieve 16, he could achieve 5, he could achieve 0, he could achieve 20, and there are kind of different probabilities of that occurring. So I do think like a well-designed model should take into consideration like, okay, if we're projecting Henry for a certain amount of target share that's maybe above his kind of usual projection, of course there are outcomes where he achieves some target share higher than that, and therefore that's going to kind of impact his projection accordingly, and certainly give him, you know, in the projection system, give him access to a ceiling where, you know, he could go off for 30 points if he is projected at 11% target share, but like achieves 17 or achieves 15 or something like that. So that's kind of how we're handling making these predictions on what's going to happen. And then also how we kind of construct the model to be flexible, to understand that, well, if we expect one thing, it doesn't mean that there can't be outcomes that are kind of on some sort of bell curve, or maybe even a skewed curve of probability centered around that point that we're projecting.
Well, when we're talking about a curve of probabilities on games that shoot out, which is, you know, you build game stacks into your lineups for those outcomes, we're looking at the highest total games. Typically, they have the most likelihood of shooting out, and that's what we cover on this show. Game stacks, correlations, leverage. So let's get to it. There's five games that have a 50-point total and over. The first one, the top right now, currently on the betting market, is the Seahawks at the Vikings. It is a 56 total. It opened at 56. It's currently at 56. The Seahawks are a 1-point road favorite, 28.5 implied total for them. Vikings 27.5 total for them. Based on our current ownership, we have the running backs are generating a decent amount. Dalvin Cook stands to be one of the higher owned backs of the slate at 8,400. Carson getting some cheap KJ Osborne, which in 2 weeks has shown a decent target share for the Vikings. But outside of that, not so much. I think out of these higher total games, there are two other games that are getting way more attention than this one. Stuart, with the correlations here, the main issue that I have is that the passing games, like outside of KJ Osborne, like this game is pretty expensive. So even though that it's a 56 total game and the highest on the board, do you think, especially in large field GPPs, there would be a merit in playing something like a Wilson, Lockett, Metcalf, Jefferson, or a Cousins, Jefferson, Thielen? We're dealing with both sides have much more condensed offenses, so we like that. The problem is that all these receivers are like 7K plus.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be an expensive build. I don't think it'll generate a ton of ownership. When I've simulated through like lineup constructions, I've got Seattle stacks being accounting for like close to 6% of stacks, which I think is relatively low considering how high the total is. And so I'm very intrigued on the Seattle side. I would say Minnesota to a lesser extent. I'm not sure what you guys have for the ownership of like Cousins versus Wilson, but I mean, we're projecting Wilson for just kind of slightly more ownership than Cousins. And like, I don't know, to me, it just feels like, you know, Wilson should be owned at just like a significantly higher rate than Cousins, given his rushing equity, given I think the condensed nature of that Seattle offense. You know, I think it is going to be tough to go like Lockett plus Metcalf. I think on slates where there is like more value available, I think it would be in consideration. I mean, we saw like an expensive stack like Kansas City be really effective in week one when there was a ton of receiver value. Not seeing like quite as much value this week. So I do think it's going to be tough to go with both those guys. But on the Seattle side, I mean, I think you could just single stack the game. I wouldn't even be opposed to throwing in like a guy like Freddie Swaiman there. You know, we've seen kind of the wide receiver three role for Seattle in the past be one that can bear fruit. And, you know, he did have a pretty solid, you know, 16% target share last week. Had the big touchdown. Everett, of course, you know, is at the tight end position. You're kind of just, I don't want to say throwing darts. I mean, I think we want to take a more nuanced approach than that. But, you know, I think just choosing the tight end that, you know, receiving tight end with the quarterback that you want to stack is typically a decent approach. So, you know, I do think going like one of Metcalf or Lockett and then going with say like Swaim or Everett could make sense. You know, the bring back on the Minnesota side could go Jefferson, could go Thielen, could go Osborne. No, I like this game stacking from the Seattle side a good bit, and would guess come Sunday it's a build that I'm a little overweight on.
Brandon, with the fact that these running backs are projected to get decent ownership, Cook, we have currently at 20% ownership, Carson around 17, and other than KJ Osborne at 10, these receivers obviously have a ceiling. Their direct leverage over these running backs, are you more inclined to play this game, even as a skinny stack, such as Wilson plus one of Metcalf or Lockett plus one of Jefferson or Thielen? Do you think that the expense of those three players combined is worth the relative value you get over, one, the running backs that are going to be owned, and the fact that probably two other games with these types of totals are going to be more owned than this one?
Yeah, my approach here would be the I would tend to take the receiver one off and then the run back. So I'll probably play two from this game. This isn't the game that I will do much stacking on. If I were stacking, I would tend to go with a primary receiver and a tight end, the sort of punt tight ends that Stuart mentions. If I choose not to have the receivers and instead have the running backs, I wouldn't in this game try to do a full game stack with the running backs and the receivers. If I were going running back, Dalvin Cook is my man. I would not want to run him this week. I think he's going to be highly owned given that Henry just beat up on the Seahawks. I also think that he's slightly beaten up and Madison is very competent. So I could see some sort of split between Cook and Madison. And moreover, as you know, Blender, I favor a lineup construction with cheap running backs and expensive wide receivers on weeks that figure to be especially high scoring like this one.
Okay. So is the reason that you're less likely to game stack more due to the fact that you don't believe that Russ or Kirk Cousins is going to necessarily be QB1 alongside your stack? Or is it just due to the fact that they're just more appealing options elsewhere?
It's that I don't think it sets up well as a game stack because of the correlations. Stuart can help me out a bit here, but as I remember it, basically, Lockett and Metcalf have correlations such that you can actually game stack the Russ, Lockett, Metcalf. They can both go off together. I'm not positive that I'm remembering that correctly, but I think you can on a normal week, but this week, because it figures to be a very high scoring week, and because both of those guys are priced above 7K, I don't think it sets up as a slate where you want to run both those guys. The Minnesota, I'm pretty certain that you don't want to play Thielen and Jefferson together based on correlations, but Stuart can fix me up on that.
Yeah, so the Lockett-Metcalf thing, I think early in Metcalf's career, particularly his rookie year, I think there was evidence of there being kind of potentially good correlative properties, or really that, and relative to their price, of course, Metcalf has come up a ton in terms of price since really his rookie year, that I think there were good routes to fitting them in. But I mean, if you look back to last year, it's kind of been one or the other. And certainly with the price hike that we've seen on Metcalf over the last one plus years, I think it's become kind of increasingly difficult to pair those two guys together. I don't have the Jefferson Thielen correlation in front of me right now, but I mean, similarly, like Jefferson's price has come up a ton such that I could see it being difficult. It looks like there's kind of slightly negative to no correlation historically between those two guys. Like, a great feeling game usually is a floor Jefferson game. Historically, a ceiling Jefferson game has been kind of variable as far as the outcomes for Thielen. To me, it feels like a spot maybe also to stay away from double stacking those two guys, especially with the emergence of Osborne. Like if you're high on that game environment, right? It seems like you could just get easier or cheaper rather access to two players in the receiving core via Osborne and really one of those other two guys. Is how I'm thinking about it.
Well, on to the next game that has what I believe a double stack that you possibly don't play just due to ownership. Next game on the docket is the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay at the LA Rams. It's a 55.5 total, opened up at 54. The Buccaneers are now a 1-point road favorite in LA. That's a 28.25 implied total for the Bucs and 27.25 for the Rams. This figures to be the most owned game on the slate. We have Godwin, Kupp, Evans, Higbee, Woods, all at double-digit ownership. We have Stafford at almost 10% and Brady at 5%. I mean, the most obvious thing here, I mean, just based on projections and how you construct your lineup, is Stafford plus Woods plus Kupp plus Godwin. But that exact combination may literally be like fully 10% total ownership of like all the lineups in like the slant or the millie or something. Based on their price and based on their projection, I'm assuming the correlation works out. Stuart, based on your top stack percentages, I would think that this comes out high, but does it come out high enough that it's warranted to play a stack just like that with the ownership the way it is?
Yeah, I mean, both teams come out great from a value standpoint, but not very well from a kind of simulated ROI for really the reasons you talked about. I mean, Stafford we have as the highest ownership quarterback. Brady, outside of the top five, looks like maybe seventh highest. And then the receivers, like really the three guys you mentioned, Kupp, Woods, Godwin, we currently have as three of the foremost owned receivers. Of course the value is great, but like we saw last week, I mean, you did yourself a huge service by staying away from large kind of bunches of that Los Angeles Dallas game. And I think just from an ownership standpoint, like this game sets up quite similarly, right? Like people are very excited about both sides of the ball. There's going to be a lot of people, I'm sure, thinking they have kind of the stack that no one's seeing, or, I don't know, or just not thinking about ownership and just thinking that they have like the nuts because of value. that I don't know, when you simulate it out, like even if these guys hit value, which, you know, seems likely, if I don't know, you know, 15% of the field is stacking Stafford, Woods, Cup, Godwin or whatever, maybe 10% on that stack and, you know, 15% on like just LA stacks in general, like, it, you know, you still have a lot more work to do, even if that kind of group of players is the nuts. And I don't know, I think our simulation data would suggest that you're probably a little better off avoiding those and just kind of counting on being set or strategizing to be like in a great position should that game as a whole fail. So I would guess I'm going to be significantly underweight on stacking this game. And like, yeah, I mean, it's really just an ownership thing. I mean, like I thought Tampa was like an excellent play last week where there was limited ownership. There was going to be so much more tension on the other games. But this week I'm not sure that that's going to be the case, especially with a big week from Brady. Gronkowski, Evans, you know, showed up. Godwin had a nice game. So, and no AB, like, or potentially no AB. I just think the ownership is going to be too much to overcome, and would be a game that I would want to be underweight on.
Brandon, I hope we're on the same side here. I hope we're on the same side, because there's two guys that I like in this game, and it's none of the guys that we just mentioned. Do you believe, from the fact that we both very similar, like playing certain types of lineup constructions, and I like playing the negative correlation to high owned players, do you think that based on the ownership at like sub 3% owned each, that the plays in this game are Daryl Henderson and Leonard Fournette and then just not play the stack at all? Or are you more likely to just say, this is the best game, I'm going to play the stack and I'll find something else different elsewhere?
I am not going to be stacking this game, but I like Robert Woods a good bit. If I recall, he had a very, very good showing last year in this matchup. And I think he's out of favor for no reason in the DFS community. And he historically has had a bit more upside than Cup. So I think his pricing is very good. And I like to have a lot of Robert Woods this week. Fournette and Henderson, I can see the case. Their price is right about where I want to be in my lineups this week. They weren't previously on my radar, but I like that price point this week. And you're playing for two touchdowns when everyone else is heavy on the wide receiver, and reasonable chance that happens. So I like the play.
Right. Really, it's not that, you know, I necessarily think Fournette and Henderson are like from a value perspective or projection perspective good. But I mean, for them to be in that low owned price range for running back, like there are other running backs that project around the same, but they're not in games that have 15 to 20% owned players that will obviously take points away from, because a lot of people will not go to the running backs in this game because it's pretty much two good run defenses, supposedly, right? If we go by prior data. And it's very hard for me to see, like, the other way to get different in this game is by playing like Van Jefferson or a Tyler Johnson. And it just seems like the upside isn't there enough that I'm willing to throw in one of these 3K guys instead, because I still don't think I'm getting different enough in my line.
Yeah. I believe that we see these high scoring weeks the same way, which is that historically, when the point totals are this high, you have had winning scores way up there, sort of 250-ish kind of thing. And the simplistic way to think about it is that you have your high-end running backs like Dalvin Cook and Henry that this week are priced 8.4, 8.6K. Then you have your high-priced receivers that are priced 7,500 plus. Historically, on weekends like this, your $4,000 wide receivers who outperform are not able to match the $8,000 wide receivers that have a good week. Even though the $4,000 guy kind of quote unquote goes off and far exceeds value, he's historically speaking not reaching the ceilings that the 7,500 player receivers that go off are reaching. So you really want to concentrate your spending on these slates on those high dollar receivers. However, at the running back position, you can find that 5K running back that sneaks around the same total as Dalvin Cook on a good day. Now, in say 2019 or 2018, we did have a surprising number of weeks where McCaffrey, let's say the high price running back, goes off to such an extent that you kind of need him in your lineups. But I kind of view that period as a little bit of an anomaly. And really what you want to do is have on a week like this, the construction of low to mid price running back that on a good week can match your Cook, McCaffrey, whatever. And then high price wide receiver and low priced tight end like a Higbee or whatever that could on a good week match your high price tight ends.
Well, talking about high price tight ends, let's go to the next game. That is the Chargers at the Chiefs. It is a 54.5 total currently. It opened up at 55. The Chiefs are a 6.5-point favorite, 30.5 implied total for the Chiefs, 24 implied total for the Chargers. Obviously, in this game, we got Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Pat Mahomes, really expensive. You got some cheap pieces in there if you wanted to take a shot on Hardman or Jack or Pringle and DeMarcus Robinson. We also have a really bumped down price on Clyde Edwards-Helaire on DraftKings at 4,800. And then on the Chargers side, we got Eckler, Allen, Mike Williams. Herbert is going to be one of the more owned quarterbacks, if not, you know, one of the top three owned quarterbacks on the slate. It always comes down, Stuart, for these Chiefs types of stacks, is that, yes, they all have the ability, have sleep-breaking performances, but, you know, obviously to double stack, you're spending almost half of your lineup on it. My problem, even in this game, to do my whole, leverage play thing, is that I'm the one that plays Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 6,300 when the Chiefs are chalky. Well, now that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is 4,800, based on our ownership, do you actually think that because of the Rams game, and we have other high total slates, that a Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, because Kelce will be owned in the tight end spot because tight end is more of a weaker position. So do you think that playing Mahomes single stack with Tyreek Hill is actually the more contrarian way to play this game?
Yeah, I do. We've got positive grades on both sides of this game in Kansas City. A little bit ahead of Los Angeles. And I don't expect ownership to be super high. I think the cost is going to be, push people away. And like you said, CEH, I think, is going to be very popular. I was going to just jump in even on the Fournette thing, but I think like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is kind of the counterpoint that I'm curious to pick your brain about. Like, do you sense that... It just seems like the ownership and kind of even DraftKings pricing and just public perception seems to anchor quite closely to running backs, running potential, the kind of running efficiency of the defense they're playing. I'm just looking like through some of our like projection inputs, and man, it's just like, it just feels like there have been a few weeks in the past where there are just so many running backs at the position that are kind of like in this sub 6K range that you can project for, you know, double digit target share. And it just seems like on average, like those guys per dollar kind of have a better chance of beating out these guys like CEH, who really, except for early in last season, has not had a significant pass catching role. Even though like a similarly priced Leonard Fournette, while he might not have the same rushing role as CEH, like he is a guy that is, you know, can get 5+ targets in a game. And it just seems like, I mean, we even saw it like last week with, you know, Najee and Darrell Henderson and Carson. You know, it just feels like ownership still kind of gravitates towards, you know, these guys that are projectable for a high rushing role. And like, it makes sense. You know, I do think like rush share is more stable than target share, you know, because teams design, they scheme to, you know, hand off the ball to certain players as were targets. You know, rarely are, aside from like screen passes, you know, plays aren't really set up to specifically pass the ball to a player. But yeah, I don't know. To me, it just feels like from an upside standpoint, you know, given how DraftKings rewards the reception, it just feels to me like there's so much more upside with these pass catching running backs than there is the rushing running backs. And, you know, maybe the rushing guys make for stable options in cash play, but for tournament purposes, like, you know, if CEH is going to get, you know, no more than like 2 targets or something, sure, he could, you know, find his way into the end zone. And, you know, if you don't have him, you're dead. But I don't know, for me, I would rather be rostering like pass catching running backs and, you know, avoiding guys like CEH. And like you said, you know, I do think that the Mahomes, Tyreek, or you could go Mahomes, Kelsey, I think throwing in like a Hardman still, you know, could make sense. Obviously is, you know, great leverage against kind of the CEH. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious to kind of hear your thoughts on like evaluating running backs rushing potential compared to their pass catching potential and how you see the field rostering running backs kind of based on that dichotomy.
Well, I think people focus a little too much on the pass catching and not on the touchdown upside. So, I mean, like I'd much rather play a running back on a team that is projected to score a lot of points and then hope it comes on the ground. Cause I think the ceilings obviously come from a mix of them, right? Like I played Chase Edmonds last week, and like the problem with Chase Edmonds that people have is that because Connor's there, that he's not going to see much red zone work. And it's like, well, he catches enough passes that I don't even care at that point, but it has to be on that barbell end. Like Austin Eckler could catch 10 passes out of the backfield. Even if he doesn't have goal line duty, I could still get a ceiling from that. It's the guys that are in the middle that I really tend to avoid. But Brandon, what are you doing this week with both Clyde Edwards-Helaire just in general at running back? Cause he fits the bill of cheap running back. Do you like those types of builds, but at 15 to 20% ownership. And then you have the Chargers who are going to get ownership also. You're going to see a lot of Herbert, Allen, Kelsey type of lineups. Is there a way to get different in this game? Is this a game that at the price you're looking to target, or are you looking to more avoid and hope this game disappoints?
I like Edwards-Helaire even at reasonably high ownership. I think you'd go ahead and roll him. It's probable that he'll be like in that 20% ownership range. And I think it's fine. I think I'll have a good bit of him because I see it as like, he's gonna have 18, 20 points a lot of the time. And I think there's like a decent chance that he has 25, 30 points, in which case he's almost a must have. But I don't think he hurts you very often. I like him quite a bit.
So, but it's more of a price consideration. Like if he was 6,200, that would mean maybe a little bit different, but at 4,800, like if he puts up 14 points at 4,800, like that may still be fine because like what other running backs in the 4 to 5K range are even going to put up that many? I mean, essentially you're matching a wide receiver in that range rather than try to like at 4,800, are you necessarily trying to match Dalvin Cook or are you just getting enough points to match like any 4K wide receiver at that point? Cause you're paying up at the other wide receiver positions. Is that more of the issue that it's not Clyde Edwards-Helaire at that ownership. It's more like a price consideration more than anything.
Yeah, the price is so good that he doesn't need two touchdowns to get there. Like, he can get 20 with one touchdown, and if he gets two touchdowns, it's excellent. If he gets zero touchdowns, you're going to lose. I think it's a worthy gamble. Like, I think he's far and away the highest points per dollar in a way that you kind of want to go with it. I think, like, more contrarian plays of the flavor Stewart mentions are your kind of Mike Davis, Najee Harris, James Robinson. And those are great guys too. I would like to have a decent number of those plays, but I think Kalera is good chalk.
Okay, going to the next game on the docket, fourth highest total on the slate. It's 52. It opened at 52. It's currently 52. It is the Arizona Cardinals at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Cardinals are a 7.5 road favorite, a lot of road favorites. Cardinals with a 29.75 implied total. Jaguars with a 22.25 implied total. The ownership on this game is pretty low. We have here at RotoGrinders, our projections, ownership projections, really have everyone in the single digits pretty much. I think this game environment is going to be pretty good. The issue comes down is the stacking, is that, the Cardinals, as we said last week with Stewart, I'm much more likely to stack Murray with cheaper receivers than rely on the fact that DeAndre Hopkins needs to get a ceiling at 8,200 while Murray puts up 35 points. But these receivers have actually come up in price now. Rondell Moore is 5,000. Christian Kirk's 5,400. Even AJ Green's 4,500 now. And then on the Jacksonville side, I mean, Marvin Jones is wide receiver one, but I mean, they're not the greatest of offenses. It feels like I want to play the game stack of this game. I think it just comes down to, I'm not really sure where to go.
Yeah, I think it is tough to figure out. Like, I'm just kind of looking by our value projections, and none of these guys are showing up as phenomenal values. I think on account of that price hike that you mentioned, you alluded to Chase Edmonds earlier. Like, he has been a guy that I've been playing a lot of this year and has not paid off so far, but I do, continue to like the spots for Edmonds, involved in the pass game. You're right, not getting some of that goal line work, but is clearly just like a more explosive and dynamic runner than Connor. And, I think there is potential for him to kind of break off like, a touchdown run from distance. Man, it is tough though to overlook. Like, I mean, Kyler has just been on another level through 2 weeks, and has yet again a strong matchup. It does become tough to kind of figure out who to pair him with.
Well, Brandon, I mean, we have Lamar. Lamar Jackson's cheaper, going to be higher owned. You can't deny the fact that Kyler Murray has a ceiling to be QB1 by far on the slate. Like, how do you handle situations like this where the game looks good, but the pieces don't necessarily look the greatest, like from a price perspective?
I like to go ahead and in a fair number of lineups pay for the high-end quarterbacks. I think it's one area where lineup construction has sort of changed over time, where I think 4 years ago, it used to be the case when you had fewer rushing quarterbacks that what you wanted to do was be sort of cheap at QB, cheaper at running back, cheaper at tight end, high end on wide receiver. I think now basically two things have happened that have made you want to shift more dollars towards QB. One is obvious. We've got these elite rushing quarterbacks that are scoring huge amounts of fantasy points. And the other thing is that the sites have not fully adjusted the pricing to these huge rushing quarterbacks. And the pricing is still roughly in line with what it is 5 years ago. What that means is that if you're categorizing your players, the highest points per dollar in general is at the quarterback position. So that means that you want to allocate more dollars to quarterback. It's just week by week, if you're just projecting fantasy points and then doing fantasy points per dollar, because QBs are somewhat underpriced, the highest points per dollar that are available tend to be at the quarterback position. Or rather, if you compare the quarterback category to the wide receiver category, quarterback just offers more points per dollar in general. So you want to allocate more dollars there. So I kind of like paying for these guys. And you look at last week, obviously Kyler was a guy you wanted in your lineup. He had a monster week, right? But Minnesota's defense also had a good week. They were also one of the best, if not the best defense to have on the week. I think they scored like 14 DraftKings points or 12 DraftKings points or something. So the point is, like, yeah, I guess if Minnesota didn't have a good defensive game, maybe Kyler wouldn't have gotten as many opportunities and wouldn't have thrown quite as much. But Kyler had that elite fantasy production, even though he made some mistakes. It wasn't like the perfect game for him. Like, his ceiling is unbelievably high. And so I would not be afraid of like paying up for these elite QBs. It might be something that you just want to do this week.
But what do you do in this game, Brandon? Pair him with who? Run it back with who? I mean, you have these two $5,700 running backs in this game. That's right in your favorite running back range. Like, it feels like this game, I mean, it has a high total. It should be at a high pace. We saw that in the first game against the Texans that the Jaguars have no problem throwing the ball 40, 50 times. Like, like I said before, my issue with the game is not the game. It's the, like, there's a lot of pieces. I mean, if I were to build lineups, it feels like I could build 50 lineups of just this stack, just to get like all the combinations of guys that I would want, and how much volume do I want to allocate to the Arizona Jacksonville game.
I think it's okay to play Hopkins at the high price along with Kyler at the high price. I think that's a fine thing to do. I know you maybe you don't like paying so much at wide receiver. Now, through two games, Rondale Moore has been the guy. So there are going to be a lot of people that just go Rondale Moore, but I would wager that the larger sample or that the consensus predictions prevail and Hopkins is the guy. So I would not be afraid to run Kyler and Hopkins. And what you're doing there is in MLB, you sort of take your reliable production from pitcher and get your variance at hitters, where things are generally less variance. The style of lineup that you would be doing in a Kyler Hopkins lineup is you would know that when you play Kyler, you need a ceiling game. You need him to be QB1 or QB2 on the week. So already when you've plugged Kyler in your lineup, you've made that bet that you need him to be QB1 or QB2. By adding Hopkins, all you're saying, you're not making a strong statement. All you're saying is that, conditional on Kyler being QB1 or QB2, Hopkins is also going to have a very good day. It's not something outlandish that you're betting on. And then you're kind of knowing that you're going to have to chase ceiling performances elsewhere in your lineup.
Right. The point that I was making last week with Hopkins and Murray was that with Murray having his ceiling tied very much to rushing touchdowns, that his rushing touchdowns come at the expense of Hopkins' touchdowns. So these rushing type quarterbacks, I'm less likely to play the high-priced wide receiver with him, because the lower-cost players, and A.J. Green, if he has a 5 for 60 in a touchdown game for like 19 points. Like, that's much more satisfactory than Hopkins having a 19 point game because Kyler rushed it in twice. Like, for the statue quarterbacks, like Tom Brady, like, I have no problem playing an 8K wide receiver with those guys because I'm not afraid of the quarterback necessarily. His Lamar's ceiling, Kyler's ceiling, to some extent, Josh Allen's ceiling, these rushing quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts' ceiling. It's like, it makes me think more about the high price wide receivers only because the quarterback themselves could vulture them for their price. So the combined expense may not be worth it. Stuart, I remember you tweeted it out because we talked about it, that like at like that 50th, 60th percentile, Kyler and DeAndre Hopkins are correlated, but at like the 80th, 90th percentile, they're actually not.
Yeah, it's like a ceiling game. Correlation, the idea is that nothing ever implies one thing. It just has an elevated probability of some alternate kind of outcome occurring. And yeah, like you said, you know, median to ceiling game for Kyler increases the probability of DeAndre going kind of median or better. But like a 80th percentile plus for Kyler doesn't necessarily have like a high probability or a much more elevated probability of Hopkins going 80th percentile or better. It really increases kind of the probability of kind of a secondary or cheaper guy like say Kirk. You know, we saw it last week with Moore, of course, getting to that 80th plus percentile game. I think it's a pretty good concept to kind of incorporate and think about as you're building like Kyler stacks and really any stack with kind of these rushing quarterbacks, them having a big game could be a huge running game. Doesn't necessarily imply like big game for expensive wide receiver one.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think that maybe the play is you do take the occasional Edmonds play, just go in on the field is not going to play him for the reasons that you mentioned, Blender, that they think he's not going to get the goal line work. But maybe if he has a couple of long runs on a dump off, both QB and running back could get there. And then you sort of take your chance with the cheaper wide receiver.
Okay.
To stack just because you're hard to know who to come back with on Jackson.
Right. That's the main thing. But the last game on the docket, we have the Ravens at the Lions, 50 total. It opened at 49. It's now up to 50. The Ravens, predictably, 7.5-point road favorite. Ravens with a 28.75 implied total. Lions with a 21.25 implied total. Stuart, would I be weird to say that this may be one of my favorite games on the slate?
No, I mean, I think it is my favorite game on the slate. I don't know. I don't really have strong opinions, but I would say.
Well, I'm just going based on ownership. I'm looking.
Yeah.
The thing is that I see Lamar is going to be one of the higher owned quarterbacks. Probably going to be in a lot of cash game lineups, I guess. The problem is that not many of the other people in the game are going to be. I think many people view the Ravens as heavy run, which they are, the Lions as horrible. And, you know, it's only a 7.5, you know, spread, but I don't think we currently have Marquise Brown at 7% ownership. He's 5,600. And based on his first two games production, it's quite possible that it'll be week 10 and we'll wonder, like, why was Marquise Brown ever 5,600? Because he's now 7,900. And if I'm going to exploit that, I want to exploit that as quickly as possible. So it feels like I could play Lamar with a single stack always because he's a rushing quarterback. And then I could fill the tight end with the opposite side. Most people, we have Andrews with 12% ownership, but we have Hockenson with 6. That a way to build around this game is to just play Lamar with Marquise Brown and TJ Hockenson, or even DeAndre Swift, because he's 5,800. He's in that that Brandon Adams range of running backs that we're looking for that does catch passes. I just think people are going to avoid this game thinking that the Ravens are going to roll them over.
Yeah, no, I love this game. Our numbers love this game. We have the Ravens as kind of the stack team with the best simulated ROI of plus 35%. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to kind of discuss Jackson. Like, of course, you know, potentially the highest, you know, we have him as the highest ceiling on the slate. I think him or Murray, you can make a case for. And yeah, I mean, they're condensed. Like, you know, Marquise Brown, he had a 39% target share last week, 20 in week one. Like, he looks awesome. Like, what's wrong with Sammy Watkins? I mean, he's had 27% target share his first 2 weeks. He seems to be a integral part of the offense. Like you said, like, Andrews, I think, is probably going to catch the most ownership of these Baltimore skill players. I think he's a fine spot, but my preference would be to go with Brown or Watkins, actually. And then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Well, not a lot, but I would say compelling pieces on the Detroit side to choose from. Like you mentioned, Hockenson, Swift, I think, is you know, a great option. Like, I wouldn't even overlook, say, a guy like Jamal Williams. He has, you know, don't love the price on him, but he has factored in the passing game in a not insignificant way. I think there's a lot you can do with this game. Lamar feels like kind of the most stable option, and there are some, I think, compelling but condensed pieces on the Baltimore side as well as the Detroit side. So I'm very interested in this game. As it stands now, I think this will probably be the team that I kind of stack up the most in my builds.
Brandon, Baltimore, we normally would see like Ravens, Lions, like you would expect. It's like, oh, run heavy and the Lions are, you know, a bad team. Like, you would expect this game to be like, you know, like a 44 total or something, but it's a 50 total. Common sense, I mean, by the way that these teams play, would think that the pace of this game is not fast, but I can't deny the fact that it's a 50 total. What are your thoughts on this game in general? Because I know you must like Lamar, because obviously he has a high ceiling to be QB1. But the other pieces in the game are really not going to be all that owned. And I think people are going to be focused on all the other games that we mentioned.
Yeah, it's the sort of simple play that we've already mentioned, but I do like the Marquise Brown pairing quite a bit. He has the right distribution for tournaments historically. He can put the ceiling games in. That simple stack is my favorite. I do sense that Arizona is more likely to score 45 points than Baltimore. I see that game has a little bit more appeal for me than it does for the two of you. But I like this game quite a bit as well.
Is the lack of appeal more the fact of the opponent? Because like in all the other games, they get like the spread is much closer, and this one is over a touchdown. Is it more that it's less likely to the Ravens are less likely to score 45 only because the Lions are going to put up very little resistance, and the Ravens won't need to?
That's kind of the way I see it. Like, I could just easily see the Arizona game going. Three quick touchdowns for Arizona. Jax comes back, scores two quick touchdowns, and you get kind of, I could see the shootout develop much, much more readily in the Arizona game. But I also like this Baltimore game. And historically, Andrews has been a great tournament tight end play. He's had an excellent distribution for his price.
Okay, Brandon, we're going to let you go. I know you have a hard out. And
yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. But me and Stuart will go over the rest, right? We went over all the games that have a 50-plus total. Are there any games that don't have that high of a total, Stuart, that stand out to you as possibly, you know, kind of under the radar, possibly, you know, based on the price, based on the ownership that you're looking into this week?
Well, I got one pretty ugly one and one, I think, less ugly one. Maybe we can start with the more ugly one. But, man, I mean, we've talked a good bit about some of these rushing upside quarterbacks, you know, Lamar, Kyler, Russell to a lesser extent. I mean, I'm a little intrigued by I don't love the skill.
Say it, pieces, say it. I know. I think I know who you're going to say.
You know, Daniel Jones, I think, to me, is interesting. What are we doing though with the skill players? Like, that's kind of where I get lost. Like, I love Jones just as a QB value that's going to get no ownership. I like the upside there, but like, talk to me about what you're thinking, because I haven't given it too much thought. Like, I guess Slayton is interesting.
It depends on their injury report, because Evan Engram is trending in the right direction, but I don't know. Galladay, I'm just looking on Twitter now. I don't think he's practiced yet. So, it seems like Shepard is the only guy that, you know, Shepard and Slayton, just these guys are cheap. I mean, like, Shepard isn't that cheap. He's 5,900. But, like, if Engram is in and Galladay's out, like, then, I mean, you got Engram at 3,600. It seems like if any of these guys are out, I don't mind single stacking. Daniel Jones is a rushing quarterback, so I don't mind, you know, just doing one. You got the obvious bringbacks in Ridley and Pitts. These stacks are easy to build because I know who I'm getting. I'm not going to chase the Cordell Patterson game, right? Saquon Barkley is going to be pot. And the thing is that Barkley is going to get ownership at running back. So playing the Jones plus pass catcher and the Ridley Pitts or, you know, kind of a run back, I think, like, how many combinations of that? Like, it feels like if I was building 150 lineups, I could build 10 of those lineups and the stack would all look the same. Maybe I rotate Shepard with Slayton, maybe Ridley with Pitts, but it's not like the Arizona game where it feels like I can make like 100 different combinations of this. To me, this almost seems too simple. The fact is that these teams are not good, right? I mean, like, this could be in a completely inefficient game, or it could be a completely mess defensively, and this game goes, you know, 38-35, and you're wondering why the hell didn't you play more?
Yeah, well, when you talk through, those Giants receiving options, especially if Galladay doesn't play, yeah, I mean, makes a lot of sense. I think just at the outset, I was liking Jones and kind of not sure what to do at skill position there. But, you know, I think it does make sense. And I hadn't looked closely at our Giants receiver numbers, but actually have pretty decent grades on Slayton and Shepard. So, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm happy you don't see – you see the beauty in like you said, a train wreck of a Giants team. But I don't know. The other one I had was Tennessee. I think just go back against the big Henry game. And we have yet to see like a big Tannehill, AJ Brown game. I think those are two efficient, highly skilled guys. So that was kind of the what I considered to be like the less ugly of the two kind of best of the rest games.
Yeah, I like that game from a secondary stack perspective.
Okay.
Like it feels like I don't even know who's going to start for the Colts. So it could be Eason, it could be Hundley, Wentz, it depends. The problem I typically have with the backup quarterback type of situations, especially in their first start, is that typically the offenses will be much more conservative, right? So that limits the shootout potential of the game as a whole. So I have to think that Eason has to throw a ball a ton and be efficient with it. So, like, if that doesn't happen, well, is Tannehill going to have to throw the ball 35 times? Well, probably not either. So, like, while I could see playing, A.J. Brown on one side and then Jonathan Taylor on the other side, or Pittman on the other side, or just play A.J. Brown or Julio, just play one Titan, or some play Derrick Henry. I mean, something like that. I'm just a little wary on the backup quarterbacks. I could say the same thing because I looked at the Bills game, the Bills versus Washington. Now, Heinicke, you know, has played a game since. So now maybe they feel a little bit more comfortable letting him go a little bit more. But those are the only concerns. It's like, I don't mind playing the Lions, who are probably a worse team than those teams. But at least it's Jared Goff. And I'm not saying that Jared Goff is a great quarterback, but they built the offense around. They know he's the starting quarterback, and that's they're going to play the way that they play. When backups are thrown into these starting roles, I just can't figure that they're going to be chucking the ball. So that's my concern on the game stack by using the quarterback. But the one-off pieces, I have no problem.
Got it. That
is there any data to support? I'm saying this completely out of thin air. Is there any data to support even what I'm saying? It feels intuitively correct, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm overweighting that.
Yeah, I don't have any data on that type of thing, and it would be a bit of work to kind of pull something together. But intuitively, I mean, it makes sense. So, I mean, I'm just curious by that logic, are you kind of pessimistic on your outlook for a guy like Justin Fields, who I know has been, I think has been kind of talked up on account of his kind of rushing upside. There's a lot of backup quarterbacks in this week. Fields, Tua should be out. I feel like there's one more, but either I'm wrong or they're just escaping me. But it sounds like you're kind of going to be underweight then on a guy like Fields and potentially, would you be like say underweight on a guy like Mooney, who I think also, could garner some, just a little bit of ownership.
Maybe as a one-off, but I mean, the Bears have a 19.25 implied total. So I'm trying to win GPPs. Like if Field gets 50 yards rushing, yeah, he can make value for his price. If he gets 18 to 20 points, like, yeah, okay, you got it. But I mean, we have five games that are 50 plus that we may have quarterbacks that get 35. And once that happens, like, then what do I care? Right. And especially against the Browns, who are more run heavy anyway. It's just like, I don't see the Bears versus Browns as the shootout game. Right. I'm more likely to see the Bills versus the Washington be the shootout. I'm more likely to see the Bengals versus the Steelers as a shootout game. And that's a 44 total. It's just like, even the Broncos, I think I'm more likely to play Teddy Bridgewater than I am to play Justin Fields. And it's not because Justin Fields doesn't have value. It's just that I don't think that built lineup has the best GPP ceiling. But if to make value, sure. Okay. Maybe Justin Fields has a good day. He rushes for a touchdown, has 60 yards rushing. He throws for one. Like, does the stack get there? I mean, how does the stack get there? What? Because then you have the Browns who could, I mean, they throw to backup fullbacks. I mean, like, who knows what they're going to do? So, like, it's quite possible that, like, no one in this game gets there. So, like what? Why am I so thrilled about playing any stack? If I look at a game and I go, I'm not sure if anyone gets there, let alone play three or four guys from it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think we're probably seeing that eye to eye. So are there any other games that haven't been mentioned? It sounds like Buffalo, Washington. Are you thinking about
Josh Allen, Stuart? I mean, it's kind of like any game that he's the quarterback and the Bills, they pass first type of offense. Is it the best matchup? No, it's not. But I don't think the ownership is going to necessarily be there. I don't think it's going to be low, but I don't think it's going to be that high. I could see myself sprinkling like Josh Allen lines. I'm not excited about it. Like I'm much more excited about the Ravens Lions or the Seahawks Vikings or, some of the games that we mentioned that aren't the Rams Buccaneers. Then like last week I devoted a ton of lineups to Josh Allen and that didn't work out. Yes, If the Bills are going to run their offense the way they run their offense, it feels like even if I play 25 single entry three max type of lineups like I did last week alongside my 150 build, I can't see myself every week playing at least three Buffalo lineups. I mean, no matter what he looks like now, like there's going to be one or two games this season where Josh Allen puts up 42 fantasy points and supports like three wide receivers in the process. Who knows what weeks that's going to be, but at least I'll have some exposure every week.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can get like Allen, Diggs, McLaurin with pretty low ownership. I mean, I just feel like I see kind of what you're saying. I mean, is that the way you would kind of think about this, mostly through kind of those three guys? With Allen, to me, it feels like a guy you probably want to double stack up.
Allen? What do you mean by Allen?
Josh Allen. You would want
Allen. Okay. Yeah. For some reason I was thinking Kyle Allen. I'm like, no, he's not. What are we talking? Yeah. No, I'd be more likely to do Allen plus Diggs plus one of Sanders or Beasley, and then run it back with either like McLaurin, even Antonio Gibson. I mean, Logan Thomas in a tight end spot or something. I mean, to me, it's fairly simple. I mean, you could play Dawson Knox if you want to just punt at tight end. I just think Josh Allen stacks are typically doubles. And how many combinations of those can there possibly be? Essentially, you're including Diggs with any of them. It's Diggs and a cheaper wide receiver. Beasley's 4,800. Sanders is 4,200. So it's not even price prohibitive. And then the guy on the other side could be, I mean, pick a guy. I mean, it's perfectly. Dyami Brown at 3,600 is even doable on this slate. Or Humphreys, even if you want it. I mean, like the price point is not even bad. So like that, why wouldn't I have some Bills lineups, even though arguably it's not the greatest of spots for a shootout, but we've said that before about the Bills, and then the game goes 42-28 out of nowhere because, you know, Josh Allen chucks for three touchdowns in the first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, at the price point that like McLaurin and Diggs are at, you know, you got Kupp at 68, you know, Keenan at 66, Godwin 61. I mean, like these guys are just going to get overlooked just because of the price point they're at. Like, I think a lot of people searching to fill kind of their last, you know, of course the people that are stacking Los Angeles are going to have Kupp or going to have Woods or whatever. But even for the people that are kind of like, oh, well, you know, I need a one-off receiver at this price point to fill up kind of my last spot, I think you're going to get a lot more people gravitating towards the Kupps, the Allens, you know, the Godwins. Tyreek is, I guess, significantly higher, but I think that makes sense. I mean, talented guys, low ownership, typically is makes for good plays.
And people should gravitate towards advanced sports analytics and your Substack, right? You're going to be putting that out, I'm assuming, today and tomorrow, and people could sign up for that, right? Yeah. If they join, it's not free anymore though, right?
Right. Yeah. So tomorrow morning, I think we'll come out with it. And it's going to have like a lot of the metrics that I'm referring to on this show, put in a table. I'll do an update, later tonight for any, spread changes, or if we get more, you know, news on some of these injury or COVID instances. Yeah. And that's $10 a month. So that's kind of the thinking there is that for kind of a cheap price, you can get access to the, condensed kind of numbers that we're looking at from our tools, or you can sign up for the site at a higher price point. And not only do you get access to that article, but you also get access to the tools themselves. So, you know, I think for some people, just kind of reading the summary or the cliff notes is the right fit. For other people, you know, who want to look at all the numbers, look at kind of the guts of where this stuff is coming from. You know, it's just a full subscription to the site with the tools might make more sense.
So go to advancedsportsanalytics.com. If you're on YouTube, like and subscribe, hit that thumbs up button. Give me those thummy thumbs if you enjoy this show. If you're playing on FanDuel this week, make sure to sign up for the DFS OGs FanDuel contest for NFL week 3. And you can compete with Beer Makers Fan, Head Chopper, Notorious. It's a well-structured contest. There'll be a link in the description if you're playing over on FanDuel. And as always, rate and review in iTunes on the Fantasy Football podcast feed for Roto-Grinders. So for Stuart Gibson, I'm Jordan Cooper, and we'll see you next week on another edition of the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on Roto-Grinders.com.